Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Bell?
Yes.
We are totally naming our kids Cher. Welcome to Panel to Screen. I'm Bo.
And I'm Bell.
Bell, man, how you doing tonight?
Man, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, good.
Oh, man, yeah. We're here, and we are once again late to the game, but we are once again back. That's right, two Panel to Screens, one after the other, 2 weeks in a row. And if you're very good, you might have one 3 weeks in a row as well. More on that later. But man, you are listening to the most unnecessary show on the internet. That's right. It's two guys talking about movies, talking about comic books, talking about comic book movies. No Star Wars tonight, ladies and gentlemen. We are back true to form because tonight we are talking about the sequel that you have all been waiting for since the unlikely to everybody outside of our community success of Deadpool. Yes, that's right. It's Deadpool 2. We're only about 5 months late, but we are here. And Bell, we should let him know there are going to be spoilers.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Spoilers. Here there be spoilers, and ye been warned. All right. So let's pull it back a little bit. Okay. The first Deadpool movie you and I saw, not together, but we saw in spirit together. And we were of we were part of the vocal majority that was pro Deadpool. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Yes. We very much enjoyed it. You know, despite the fact that me personally, I'm not a big violence guy. Bell loves the violence. He revels in it.
I'm a violent person. I have been to jail on 15 different occasions for violence.
Well, we're not going to talk about that on this episode, but but no, we very much enjoyed it. Honestly, man, I kind of went into this movie thinking there is absolutely no way that they could do better than the first. The first just was so special. It had so much going for it in that it had so much going against it, which kind of made it all that more special. And I'll just leave it at that. Going into it, that's where my head was. But what was your head going into this movie?
So yeah, like Deadpool 1 was a lightning strike, right? And I had a similar idea. I was like, there's no way lightning is going to strike twice. I think going into it, I was like, it's going to be good. It's going to be funny. It's going to be there. It's going to be a positive experience. But I don't know if it's going to top the first one, just because it's. I mean, it's, you know, it's. Yeah, I don't think you can. You know, lightning doesn't strike twice very often. So it was. I completely thought that I was going to be impressed and I was going to enjoy it, but I didn't think it was going to surpass the original.
Now, of course, they set up at the very tail end for those that stayed beyond the credits to let us know that Cable was going to be in this movie. We knew that because of that, time travel was going to be involved. And because of all the way that time travel has been utilized in the X-Men comics and especially in the X-Men films, we knew there were going to be some fun hijinks that come along with that. Now, I know what you think we're going to do and what you really kind of want us to do is just jump to the end credits scene because holy shnikes, that end credits scene. But no, we're not going to do that. We're actually going to talk about the movie, and then we'll talk about the end credits.
See, we're going to have an end credit scene on this podcast to talk about the end credit scene.
No, I got something special for the folks at home. All right, so let's run it down. Of course, Ryan Reynolds returns as the title character himself, Mr. Deadpool, Wade Wilson. What did you think of this take on Wade Wilson?
You know, it was very much like the original. You know, I think Ryan Reynolds has always just had that just Wade Wilson Deadpool down, with the exception of the previous incarnations of the character. I think, you know, he pretty much perfected it in the first Deadpool and carries that on into this film.
Yeah, you know, I would even say that in this movie, more so than in the first, although this was not lacking in the first, Deadpool had a heart. Like, you really got like the human side of Wade Wilson in his very kind of emotional story and the motivations for why he was doing. And of course the, you know, the scenes in which he had with Vanessa and just kind of the connection that they had and everything. And, you know, I bought it. I believed it. And I mean, I believed it in the first movie, but this movie seemed almost a little bit more, what's the right way to say this? Because like I said, I guess human, like they're just, the relationship seemed very human.
Between Vanessa and Wade?
Yeah. Like it made Wade feel more like a person and not just kind of the slapstick hero, although he had all that as well. And that's something that I think this movie does really well and kind of carried on from the first movie, is had both the heart and the slapstick. You know what I mean? It had like the extreme, like real pain moments that kind of get you in with the drama and the emotion and everything else, but then also the insane violence that's just over the top and oddly hilarious.
Yeah, you know, the relationship between Vanessa and Wade in the first film kind of, you know, humanized the character a bit, and then it, you know, more so in this one, even though, you know, she dies in the first 5 minutes. But
if you could turn back time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, but that was an avenue for which them, for the writers and whatnot to, present another way, another avenue by which to, humanize Deadpool. And that was through, the character of Russell. And
that's true.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, it was his relationship with Russell, did more to humanize him, I feel, than, a lot of the Vanessa stuff that we saw in the first movie.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So here's the thing with Vanessa. So, they, you know, for those unfamiliar with the comic book character, the idea is that Deadpool is in love with death, like the aspect of death, in the same way that Thanos from the comics is also in love with the aspect of death. And so what I found kind of creative is that they essentially turned Vanessa into that role. Because the idea, of course, is that since Deadpool is in love with death, but he cannot die, he can never be with the one that he loves. And so they essentially took that concept and turned it into this idea of Vanessa being beyond, you know, the mortal coil, and he can't return to be with her because he cannot die. And so I thought they took this fantastic concept and made it a very kind of real human, more relatable concept with what they did with Vanessa and us. And you're right. Russell was almost the quest that she sent him on. Like, you want to be with me, there's stuff you got to do first. And part of this is to save this kid. What'd you think of Russell?
I liked him. You know, I had read that this role was specifically tailored for Julian Dennison, the actor who plays Russell. Yeah, essentially Ryan Reynolds saw him in The Hunt for the Wilder People, which I need to see because I hear it's really good, because it's also Taiki Waititi, the same guy who directed Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah.
Who also did What They Do in Shadows. Famous New Zealand director, you know, did Thor Ragnarok, as I said. But yeah, so Reynolds saw Julian in Hunt for the Wilder People and was like, he's in the film, like, that we're making this role for him. So, wow. It was really neat. And I thought he was hilarious. I thought he was brilliant. It just, like, you know, because a lot of times you'll see kids in movies and they're kind of watered down. Like, I remember when I was his age and I was like, you know, I wasn't, you know, killing people with pyrotechnic fire and like trying to like blow up cop cars and stuff with my, you know, mental fire powers. But I had a foul mouth on me, and I thought that was really it's really hilarious how they did his character, like the prison wallet, like all that stuff was just oh, I don't know. I loved it. I thought he was great.
You knew that kid in high school. And if you didn't know that kid, you were Belle. You were that kid.
You either knew him or it was you. And in this case, I think it was me.
That was great. And I loved how they kind of, you know, had this. It was very, there's a lot of tropes in this movie. And of course, it being Deadpool, they call out those tropes. And so part of that is the relationship and the dynamic of, the simple misunderstanding which sets them apart and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we've seen this before, but it works. And the kid did a really fantastic job as Fire Fist. Interesting that, of course, he would be the one that would go on to murder Josh Brolin, a.k.a. Cable's family. We do have Cable in this movie. We've got a, I would say, if you could go back in time, if you could turn back time and tell me that we were going to see a live action Cable and I would envision what that would be, this is even better than what I could have possibly envisioned. This is really, really step out of the pages good.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I thought Cable was pretty near perfect. Josh Brolin is just an excellent actor. And it was funny to me because I'm sitting here thinking Infinity War came out before Deadpool 2, right?
Yeah, by like a hair.
Yeah. And so it was really weird to me going from, Josh Brolin as Thanos to Josh Brolin as Cable. It kind of helped that it wasn't that it was like CG Thanos and right. Josh Brolin in person. But like, you know, he's got that gravelly kind of voice. But even still, like the separation and distinction between the two is just really good. And I thought he did an excellent job bringing Cable to life. And you know, just you can see the pain on his face, every time he thinks about his daughter and all that kind of stuff. And I think he did just an excellent job with that.
Role. The teddy bear, like the way that the teddy bear, the ashes of it kind of mirror his own scars is just so fantastic. And I got to tell you, my oldest, I gave her a teddy bear when she was little. And like, you know, that's that teddy bear is like the avatar of her father. Like she knows that, like, you know, she's got the teddy bear to remind her that her daddy loves her even when I'm not there. And so it's like one of these things where, like, you know, the connection between the child and the bear and the dad that gives it to her and everything. Like, I get that. That resonated with me.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, well done. You're right. Josh Brolin is having like the best Marvel season ever right now. He's getting it from both ends. He's doing good. We also had Domino. Holy shnikes, man. She was awesome.
Yeah, she did an excellent job as well. Like, just
Zazie Beetz.
Yeah, Zazie Beetz just completely embraced the role of Domino. And I love the, like, gosh, it's almost like a sibling rivalry between her and Deadpool.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, to me, it was more like, because of her power set, like, everything's going to go her way. So she's insanely cocky and she has every right to be, what I mean? Like, it's like, all right, whatever. Like, it's going to happen.
But like, when they're arguing, it's like, you know, Lux is not a superpower. She's like, yes, it is. He's like, no, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yeah, it is. No, it's not. You know, just the little things that they had going on there. It kind of felt like that to me, but you're absolutely right. Like, because of her power set, it's going to be, you know, hard for her not to be cocky because everything goes exactly how, you know, she wants it to.
When it almost kind of reminds me of Kilgore, or not Kilgore, Kilgrave.
Yeah. The purple
and this
man.
Is like the way that he viewed the world. Like, it was very explicit. Like, you know, how do I know what people want and don't want? Because everything I want them to do is what they seem to want to do. Like, he has no concept of what it's like to be in a healthy relationship with anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or for anybody to exist apart from his own desires. And so they, you know, Zazie played that character phenomenally because this is a lady who her entire life, everything has gone her way. Like, once her mutation manifested, which was while she was, you know, kind of early on in this institution and everything. So since that moment forward, everything's just kind of gone her way. And so she just kind of has, like, you know, wakes up in the morning. I wonder what the day's got for me today, because it's going to be fine. It's going to be great. And that's how she played it.
Yeah.
Like, even at the end, we're like, we can really use a bus. And then a bus shows up, like, huh. All right. Yeah. Like, no, not even surprised. Just like, well, there it is. You know, I knew we needed it. And now it's here.
Yeah. And she, the whole bit where she's talking about how you're like, I don't know. I just felt like there's some kind of reason why I should be here. And then, oh, it's the orphanage where I grew up. Here's the reason why I'm here. Okay, cool.
TJ Miller also returns as Weasel. Mm-hmm. He was TJ Miller. We also have Blind Al returning, grossly underused, in my opinion.
Yes, but she did her scenes that she was in. She kind of stole the show. I think
she was only in one scene though, right?
Yeah. And she stole it up until the point that they showed, baby legs Wade.
Yeah. Full on Winnie the Poohing it.
I don't know, but it was so great because, disturbing. Yeah. But the best thing about the scenes that she was in is Wade's like a stash of cocaine and the cure for blindness actually exists in the apartment.
Oh man. Yeah.
Did you, you notice that, right? Like when he's
the carry on from the first movie and it was inside the floorboard. No, I got that.
Yeah.
Very clever. Very clever. Speaking of returning characters, not grossly underused. In fact, got a big upgrade. Dopinder.
Yes. Dopinder is dope, man.
He gets the kill shot, man.
Yeah. He wanted to kill the entire movie and they're like, no, you can't do it. And then like the one guy that needs to die ends up living.
They beat you over the head with like, this dude is evil. He tortures kids. Like he needs to die. Like this guy, if you are not comfortable with like killing the bad guy or whatever, yet you're still in a Deadpool movie, just understand, like, we're going to make you comfortable with the fact that this guy's going to die. And when it looks like he's getting away, freaking Dopinder with the kill shot.
Yeah. Just out of nowhere. Oh, that was brilliant. I'm sitting there like you're saying, you know, it's like the audience is built up. We know that this guy's going to meet a horrific end. And we're like, it can't be Fire Fist because if Fire Fist does it, everything goes bad. So it's like, I guess it's going to be Deadpool. It's going to be Cable. It's going to be Domino. It's going to be somebody. It's going to be Colossus. Doubtful. But they're all just walking away. And he's like sitting there yelling at me like, why isn't this guy dead yet? And then out of nowhere, Dopinder comes for the save. And you're like, that's perfect. That's the absolute. You know, that's a great way to get rid of this terrible person, to have him get run over by a taxi cab.
Yeah, and I think I used that maneuver a couple of times in Halo back in the day.
Just the Warthog out of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. We also have the return of Negasonic Teenage Warhead and new girlfriend Yukio. Hi, Wade.
Hi, Yukio.
But they were also somewhat underused, I thought.
Yeah, they were woefully underused. Especially since they are, I want to say, the first LGBTQ couple in a comic book movie. Like that's been on screen represented as an LGBTQ couple. There have been like, oh yeah, Lando's pansexual, or you know, the Valkyrie from Thor Ragnarok is.
Lando's not a comic book character.
I know, but still, but the Valkyrie from Thor Ragnarok. So
it was implied or at least confirmed after the fact or something like that. Like you, cause you had mentioned something like that in our review and I was like, I didn't get that at all.
Yeah.
And then I think I read an article. I was like, oh, huh. Okay. I didn't like, she had so much chemistry with Thor. I didn't even think that was that was on the table, but
it was very, very subdued in Thor Ragnarok, but this one's just right here out in the open and I loved it. And I wish there was more that they could have done with those characters.
It makes sense, especially with the X-Men franchise, which, you know, in the modern era has become kind of like a, what do you call it when it's like symbolic, allegory, kind of allegorical about LGBT rights?
Yeah, for sure.
I is that right though?
I think it is. Like I was doing some research before we started recording, and I
got Shatterstar on here. Although it was even Shatterstar was speaking of underused X-Force as a whole.
Yeah.
dude. Okay, so X-Force getting annihilated instantly. Thoughts. What did you think about that?
So there are several things that I didn't see coming. This was one of them. Like they're sitting there putting everybody together and I'm like, okay, we got Terry Crews. We got all the like Shatterstar, like you're bringing all these characters out of the woodwork. And I'm like, this is going to be crazy. This is going to be so awesome. We're going to have like, you know, Deadpool 3 is going to be like Deadpool and the X-Force or whatever. And the only two to survive the drop were Deadpool and Domino.
Yeah,
I was so hoping that Peter was going to live just because, you know, I thought that was just a great, great gag. And I guess,
well, hashtag share rules. He was fine. He was saved he was saved in overtime. So Peter was fine. But yeah, it was actually hilarious. I did not expect Peter to die in that sequence.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be one. You know, when I saw everybody starting to die, I was like, OK, well, Peter's not going to die, but he totally dies. And holy crap, the craziest cameo in the world, Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt!
As the Invisible Man.
Dude, that was hilarious.
Oh my
like,
gosh.
It's so brilliant, too. Like, you know, you get whatever the biggest Hollywood star you could get for, like, this 2 seconds of being shocked to death.
The Vanisher.
Bravo.
Yeah, see, I thought it was just going to be a gag, right? Like, the Vanisher, there's nobody there. And then you see the parachute just run past everybody and jump out, and you're like, oh, it really is a guy.
That was the best. Yeah, I was right there with you. I thought for sure he was like a nobody.
Yeah.
So for the most part, what was advertised as X-Force gets
absolutely
annihilated. They get X'd. X gonna give it to him, and they got it. And so that was hilarious. Zeitgeist. I'm trying to think. Bill Skarsgård was in there. Peter, great job with Peter. Loved Peter.
Yeah, Peter was great. You know, just show. I saw the article or the ad, so I just showed up. And they're like, "What are your superpowers?" He's like, don't have any."
Great for the advertising campaign. And I was actually worried that character was going to lose the comedic factor once we saw it in the big screen, because that was so much part of the promotional material. But nope, they did a great job, especially with the way they killed him out of nowhere. It was like, oh, all right, well, there you go. Yeah. Colossus has returned, gets some big moments throughout.
Yeah.
Deadpool makes him curse at the end. I thought that was, that reminded me of high school a little bit.
Yeah. As always, I think this is the best representation of Colossus that we've had in all the X-Men films. I thought the same thing in Deadpool 1. I think, you know, in Deadpool 2, he kind of, you know, steps up that game and just does. That's comic book Colossus right there.
Yes, yes. And for those unfamiliar, if you haven't pieced this together, high school Bowen Bell. I was the Colossus. He was the Deadpool.
Yes.
That's the way that was worked out. Gets a big fight sequence with huge shocker. I had no idea this was coming. Even when it was, you know, a big, what do they call it? A big walloping, big heaping pile of foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Dude, Juggernaut.
Yeah.
Freaking redeemed.
Absolutely. That was one of the other things that I did not see coming at all, was Juggernaut being in this movie. And I was like, holy crap, this is the Juggernaut that we always should have had. And another interesting bit of trivia here, the reason why it was Vinnie Jones playing this character and not, you know, a giant CG character like you would think that Juggernaut would be, it was
He was a giant CG character.
No, I'm talking about in the original X-Men films.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, one of the producers was like, we don't want to have giant CG characters. Everybody's got to be like realistic and human sized. And that's one of the reasons why this Juggernaut did not work in that film. But in Deadpool 2, yeah, that's Juggernaut. It's exactly Juggernaut.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Like, redeemed in execution, but I will say, I mean, he was not the best CG character. But like in modern era by a long shot, like it was very clear he was not real. And admittedly, they had even the gag, right? Like Deadpool's like, oh, time for two big CGI characters to have a big, like, here's a big CGI fight or whatever.
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you. The CG wasn't the best, but that's Juggernaut. And the fact that was Juggernaut overrode in my brain the fact that they spent more money on Colossus as CGI than they did Juggernaut. Yeah.
No, I'm totally with you. And yes, it's very clear because for the most part, even though, you know, Colossus isn't actually there, he looks phenomenal. Whereas Juggernaut, yeah, he looked a little, it wasn't great. And it was part of it. It was like, even his clothes, you could tell, were just very CGI. Yeah.
Well, fabric's hard to render.
But redeemed in execution, a powerhouse threat, definitely unstoppable. Man, throughout this entire movie, there was a ton of Marvel, like, cinematic references throughout. Like, I think he called him Hawkeye at some point when he's fighting. Deadpool is like, come on, big guy, sun's getting real low. Yeah. Like a Hulk reference in there. Like, there was a ton of that stuff. Well,
then the whole freaking scene in the X-Mansion when he's like, there's no one ever here. And it's the entire, you know, X-Men Apocalypse / you know, Days of Future Past cast.
Okay.
In that room.
Full disclosure, I did not like that cameo.
You didn't?
No, because, and I know this is a weird thing to say based on what we're going to talk about here in a couple minutes, but I feel like that breaks the timeline, because those shouldn't be the X-Men of this decade, like of the modern era. That was them when they were in the 80s. You know what I mean? Like, they should have gotten old school X-Men cameos as opposed to the new kids.
Yeah, I could see that, but I mean, I don't know.
That breaks the continuity for me. And again, I realize saying that based on what we're about to talk about sounds crazy, but that just breaks the continuity for me.
But can I just say this, though? I think that Deadpool 2 is the best X-Men movie that's ever been made.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. So I see what you're doing here. So you're not counting Deadpool 1 as an X-Men movie?
Yes and no, because, like, you know...
He gets recruited as X-Men. He's like, hey, come here. He goes. He's like, you know, you must eat breakfast as X-Men. You brush teeth as X-Men. He's got the two X-Men.
Yeah. But see, the thing with that one was, is because it was the, you know, the first take of this character, and they were kind of reluctant to, like, let their other franchise characters be used in the film. A lot of it was like tongue-in-cheek references to X-Men, but this one actually felt like an X-Men movie. you know? Even though it was a Deadpool focused, it felt like X-Men. Seeing Juggernaut was, I think, a large portion of that. Yes. But, you know, seeing the X-Jet, like, responding to stuff and, you know, the different mutants and, like, you know, Black Tom Cassidy, like, all these just, you know, weird, random X-Men villains and just...
Yeah, they go in on Deadpool. They don't shy away. Like, that's one of the things that this franchise has done really well. Is dive deep into X-Men lore and not be afraid to get weird and crazy because it's Deadpool. And they can... So, you know, it does make you excited for what they could potentially do with X-Force. All right. So that's all the characters overall. Really great movie. All right. So the end credit scene. Holy crap, Bell. If I could turn back time, I feel like somebody, whoever wrote that post credit scene, is a Flash TV Talk fan. And for the panel to screen listeners who've never listened to Flash TV Talk and don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry. We got you covered at the end of this episode to bring you up to speed. Stay tuned. But Bell, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That good credit scene.
Yeah. Oh, it was brilliant. It was brilliant.
So, all right. So let's see. Where to even begin?
Well,
did this movie happen? All right. So let's talk about the criticism of the first.
Let's talk about the events that happened, and then we'll talk about the criticisms to them, perhaps.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay. So, Negasonic Teenage Warhead and Yukio fix the time travel device and give it to Wade and realize that they've just made an incredibly bad mistake because, of course, Wade goes back and decides to fix some things. First off, he prevents Vanessa from dying. So she's not dead.
Right. Right. He gives the epic line. We're definitely name hunting our kids.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I stood up and cheered at that. That was great. Yeah. But, All right, so you want to? Go through the overview, and then we'll take it.
And then he goes to Bryan Singer X-Men movies to X-Men Origins Wolverine and.
No. He saves Peter next.
Oh, that's right. He saves Peter next. Yeah. So he goes back and then he saves Peter next. So Peter's not dead. However, he didn't bother saving any of the other X-Force members, which is
they weren't Sugar Bear. He had to save Sugar Bear. He had Sugar Bear's back.
That's true. That's true. Which kind of, you know, I would love to see Terry Crews in a Deadpool 3 X-Force.
Yeah, he ain't going to be in Deadpool 3.
Yeah, he ain't going to be in Deadpool 3. And then we see Ryan Reynolds we see Deadpool go back to the X-Men Origins Wolverine time and kill the previous incarnation of himself, which was great. Because I loved the gag in the first Deadpool where he's playing with the X-Men little toy, the Deadpool toy.
Yeah.
But this was perfect. Like, this is
so much better.
Yeah. And, of course, finally, he goes back to Ryan Reynolds' house. And it's Ryan Reynolds looking at the script for the Green Lantern. And he then kills Ryan Reynolds, which was just perfect. You see the bullet hole go through the script and it's Green Lantern. And it was brilliant.
That sounds like the name of like a Deadpool one shot. Deadpool kills Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, right. That's great.
And then says, you're welcome, Canada.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. So just comedy out. Like, so, I mean, it has to be acknowledged. One of the best, possibly the best end credit scene in the history of a comic book movie.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
But it was not without its criticisms. So let's take that first bit. In the first end credit sequence, and by the way, this has been confirmed that this is canon. All right. So the end credit scene was canon. So if anybody was wondering whether or not everything that we just saw, we actually saw, we did see it. It was canon. This happens. So in the end credits, they basically undo the movie to some extent because he saves Vanessa, which means there's no need for the events of everything that transpires in this movie. So the movie is kind of canceled in the end credit scene. But thoughts on that?
So I don't know, because when he goes back, does he replace himself? Because Cable doesn't have that problem because Cable doesn't exist at that time period, but Deadpool does.
I mean, that's a good question. Obviously, he didn't replace himself, a la cleaning up the timeline, killing himself, you know.
Well, we didn't see him. He may have.
All right, so here's my take on this.
Okay.
I think that what we saw, because, I mean, this just goes into the whole thing, too. Like, he pops over to the... X-Men Origins time, you know, time and kills him. I think he's jumping through timelines. I don't think he's just going through his own time. He's jumping through various timelines, right?
So then the timeline where he saves Vanessa is, so that's not going to be in Deadpool 3.
I think that is going to be in Dead Thrill 3, because I think he's going to return to that time.
Okay. See,
you know what I mean?
Because the way I was thinking it is he takes one of the collars back with him, puts it on the early version of himself, kills that one, because he, as the character, has you know, grown and evolved.
Oh, he does replace himself. Because remember, he was the one that actually killed the guy at the door. So that was actually him. Yeah, I think he does replace himself when he goes back in time.
Okay.
So like he shifts back to where he was at that particular point, but then with all the knowledge that he has at that moment.
So then in that
which means it would. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no hang up there.
I see what you're saying. Well, all right. So yeah, that's a good point. All right. So that kills my theory. I don't know. I mean, the big question is Cable, because we know we're keeping Cable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Well, Cable, you know, he said, my timeline's fine. I don't need to go back yet. But he's going to try to make it so that we don't screw it up. So he's going to hang around.
Right, but if this movie never happened, then he's not here.
But the movie did happen.
But it didn't happen.
No. It does.
No, it does, right. But then it doesn't by the end of it. You see what I'm saying? I'm not complaining about this, by the way, because actually I think all of this is brilliant, and I have literally no problem with the plot holes they've created for themselves, because it's the X-Men franchise, and like time-traveling plot holes are just par for the course.
Yeah.
Like that's part of this franchise.
Yeah. And I mean, come on, you and I like, you know, discussing minutiae of time travel, you know, like it's our job.
I mean, here's what I'm thinking is going to end up happening. I think at the beginning of Deadpool 3 and or X-Force, there's going to be some throwaway line. Like, I guarantee it's all going to be wrapped up in some throwaway line. And it may be as simple as, like, huh? What? And then, like, nobody ever addresses it again. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be just, we're going to acknowledge it, and then we're going to move
on. Yeah, I feel like, because that's the thing, is they've kind of earned that credit, you know, with how they've done Deadpool. And I think that's how, like, Deadpool would say some sort of, you know, quip or something like that, sort of be like, you know, hand wave it away. And or either that or someone will hand wave it away and then he will quip at it and be like, that's just lazy writing or something like that, you know?
Well, and that's kind of and some people might not like this about Deadpool, but it's one of the it's one of the things that only Deadpool can get away with. You know what I mean? Like in Spider-Man, you know, they can tell you it's magic. We don't have to explain it. And there will be an uproar, as there should be, because that's not a solid explanation for, you know, drastic changes without story or explanation. But if it's Deadpool, then he's making fun of the fact that sometimes they'll say it's magic. We don't have to explain it. You know what I mean? Like it's almost like parody as opposed to reality.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see how it all comes together. Did you have any clue what was coming with these end credit scenes?
No, I had no idea.
Favorite moment?
When he killed the Deadpool from X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Just beautiful.
Because that's such a terrible film, and it's just, and that felt like justice to me, you know? There's so much injustice around in the world today. That just felt like justice.
It did, though. Like, they even showed, like, you know, Hugh Jackman. Like, they showed him saying, wait, you know, Stryker found a way to shut you up. Like, they played a clip of the movie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then he like looks at him. He's like, "Love you." Yeah, just so good. It was so good.
Oh, it was brilliant and it was wonderful. And like, yeah, the whole movie was worth it just for that scene.
Oh, it was so good. I mean, it was a good movie on its own. And you know, the funny thing is, and we've talked about this in other reviews, I'm not a violence guy. I typically don't like violence. I don't like when the hero kills. I think that heroes don't kill. You know, even, you know, I don't like the reveling in gore and that sort of thing. I'm not one for crude humor, but for whatever reason, Deadpool, the movie, cause I've never even been into the Deadpool comics, but the first Deadpool really kind of did it right. And it made it charmingly funny in a really disgusting and terrible way. And the sequel continues on that. It pushes all the boundaries that the first one kind of established, and it all very much works. So as somebody who is a Deadpool fan, Bell, I can imagine this was a huge success for you, but where does it fall on the scale from 1 to 5?
This movie was damn near perfection for me. I'm just going to say that.
This one, really?
Yeah, it was like, cause there's so many things about it that were just unexpected. And that's the thing, is a lot of times with comic book movies and whatnot, you know, it's their tropes that they go by, which there were in this movie. And but the way they like tongue in cheek acknowledge those tropes make them pay off more. And the fact that I was surprised about not one but two different big surprises in this film The first being X-Force all getting, you know, got in the scene that they're revealed, and Juggernaut, and then the end credit scene. Like, it was just all of that just rolled together, and it just made like a perfect Deadpool experience for me. And I don't know, I'm gonna have to say this was definitely like a 4.5 out of 5 for me.
Wow. I mean, like, you don't just hand out fives. Everybody knows this about Bell. He's pretty stingy with the fives.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good sequel, good follow-up to Deadpool. I think it sets up a lot of fun stuff for the future. You know, it wasn't as tight as the original Deadpool, in my opinion. I thought the first one was far better from just kind of being a self-contained movie and kind of flowing a little bit faster and, you know, more fun. Like, I would rather go rewatch the first Deadpool than rewatch this one again immediately. And so for that reason, I give it a 4 out of 5, but it's a fun time at the movies if you're down with all the stuff that Deadpool is down with. Otherwise, you don't need to see this movie. It is not for you, but it is quite good. So I very much enjoyed it. All right. So that is our rankings, but we want to hear from you. Head over to Panel to Screen, the Facebook page, facebook.com/Panel to Screen. Share your thoughts there. You can also be sure to check out the Woo view that is there. Woo is always holding it down on the Facebook page. Can I get a woo woo?
Woo woo.
We also want to give a shout out to Flash TV Talk, a podcast hosted by two great guys who are allowing us to utilize their feed for Panel to Screen for the interim future as we work out some stuff on the back end. Stick around for a wonderful Flash TV Talk, the number one podcast for the CW's Flash. That's happening. It's me and Bell. It's our show. That's what I was trying to say. You know, and it's funny, Bell, because as you know, you and I were kind of talking before the show, we thought we should close this episode out with maybe a bit like, you know, utilizing time travel to go back and fix our mistakes. But we don't have that many mistakes, man. Like, for the most part, we've done good.
Yeah. You know, I know there's been a couple faux pas here and there that
we're not talking about the TV. We're just not talking about the TV. But yeah.
But
like, what faux pas do we have,
man? I've tried to rack my brain, and I know we had to go back and apologize for something. And I want to say,
well, Legend, the first season of Legends TV Talk. Yes, I'll apologize for that right now.
Yeah. And then, you know, a couple times, I think, what was it like? Our professionalism was brought into question, and you know, there's been some issues where a couple episodes here and there where maybe you and I weren't as familiar with the episode as we should have been going into recording a podcast about an episode. But it's they're few and far between.
Yeah, let's put it this way. There's no memorable. We didn't kill Peter. You know what I mean? Like, there's no
true
big memorable stuff. We didn't sew Deadpool's mouth shut. Like, we don't have that level. You know, I'll put it this way. If I could turn back time, Bell, I would not change a thing, which made me realize, you know what? For the Panel to Screen audience that may not be as familiar with our full repertoire of podcasting, I thought it was best to actually close out this episode by taking them back, all the way back, to one of our greatest moments in podcast history. Flash TV Talk fans know what I'm talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, we're closing it out tonight with some Share TV Talk.
Because it's shared.
I can't look away.
See, I'm glad I'm not watching it. I'm just listening to it. And I can still, like, see her straddling the battleship's main gun.
Yeah, she is doing that. And now she's
that
doing some kind of, like,
burned into my memory. Want a Pineapple, we are talking about Cher's 19... Oh, you know what? I need to have this prepared beforehand.
It was If You Could Turn Back Time, Cher... I'm not sure what year it came out. It was definitely the 80s. I see no numbers in front of me, but I don't need to know this came out in the 80s.
Yes, this is from Cher's hit single, If I Could Turn Back Time, released June 1st, 1989. Where she dances in what some would consider an outfit, what others might consider a piece of cloth and some fishnet things, and she is dancing on a battleship. Which, that was back in the 80s when we still had battleships.
I want to make an observation, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to.
This is a
work safe, family friendly. We are.
I'm looking at some of these photos from that video, and
I'm watching the video. Also, she doesn't so much as dance as she does just kind of like, she's just kind of there.
You know, Cher doesn't have to dance.
No, she's Cher.
She, yeah, exactly.
We should go on record as stating that we love Cher. Like that, I mean, not like
fully support Cher.
Fully support Cher. We are Cher. We Cher fans
do
might be too strong.
Not fully support Cher's clothing choice in the seminal 1989 video for "If I Could Turn Back Time."
Well, it's one of those things, man. The 80s gave us a lot of music videos that it couldn't take back. Even if it could, nope. if it could turn back time, man. Like, that's the thing. She was singing about if she could turn back time to not go and do this video, right?
Future Cher went back in time and released a song about not releasing that song.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Great.
And again, we here at Flash TV Talk have the utmost respect for Cher.
We are
and all that she has done.
100% not anti-Cher.
However, just go watch the video for Turn Back Time.
Or don't. We're not advocating to go watch. We want to make sure that it's clear. We are 100% not necessarily actively pro-Cher, but we are definitely not anti-Cher.
Yes.
But we are pro-Cher?
We're Cher neutral.
We're Cher neutral. But
we're
like
the Switzerland of Cher opinions.
Yeah, but like with a little extra like emphasis on the positive side of neutral.
Sure, we would trade with Cher during a time of war, but not with Cher's enemies.
Yeah, no, it depends on who her enemies were. What if her enemies were Beyonce?
Ooh.
That's the
thing.
Then
all the single ladies would be on her side.
That's what I'm saying.
That would be, yeah.
You can't do it.
In that case, that would be a hard, you know, we'd have to draft a resolution of neutrality in that particular instance.
I'm just saying that it's all day, all the time, every day, all day, every day, Cher all the way, unless Beyonce is an option.
Yes.
Or anyone else. What I'm saying is, Cher on her own is awesome. But if there is other options, I'm not saying I wouldn't take those other options in terms of music or just general hangoutness or whatever.
Yeah. If someone was like, hey, do you want to come hang out with Cher? I'm not going to be like, no.
No, I would totally. Are you kidding me? I would totally hang out with Cher. Now, if they said like, hey, would you hang out? You got two options. Hang out with Cher or say, you know, Carrot Top.
I would hang out with Cher.
Tough call, though, right? Tough call.
You know, it is. That's a hard one.
That's really hard. It's a hard one to do.
Wait, hold on. Is this pre-roids Carrot Top or post-roids Carrot Top?
I'm not that much of a Carrot Top fan to know what's going on with Carrot Top.
Just Google a picture of Carrot Top and like the guy has done more steroids than every professional wrestler combined.
Well, fair enough. I was trying to stay in the Vegas wheelhouse, but one way or the other, you've got Cher. Cher calls you up, said, hey, I'm going to brunch. Do you want to come with? You say
yes.
And now, okay, but here's the thing, Nobel. Not like 5 minutes later, Cher has just called you up. You have just said you're going to brunch with her. You get another phone call. David Blaine has called you. He also wants to go to lunch. Wait for it. The exact same time. What do you do, Matthew Bell?
Man, that's tough.
Who are you going
with? I've made the obligation to Cher.
I mean, you made the obligation to Cher.
But it's David Blaine. Magic's pretty cool.
It's David Blaine. I mean, how could you? I mean, so that's the thing. If Cher calls up and wants to go to brunch, you say yes. If anybody else offers the exact same time, you might say yes to the other person.
You might have to flip flop.
That's right. It's just the way it is. Welcome to Cher TV Talk. One of Pineapple says, little known fact, I listen to Flash TV Talk for the Cher Talk.
You know what? A lot of other people do.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.